This is a production of Cornell University.
Along the way, it's been instrumental. It's actually made the project a lot better. reason I'm here tonight is because you've heard a little bit about this, but we're moving through the approval process. There's been a lot of public feedback in favor of the project and some that have some concerns about the project. But we think it's really important for your voice to be represented in that public feedback process, because this is here to serve you. This would not exist without Cornell's graduate professional students. So we really want your voice to be heard through this approval process. I know that there was a resolution passed, and thank you for that. I think that's going to be very helpful as well. And tomorrow evening, there's a public hearing to discuss this project where a lot of people will come out. It's at 7 p.m. in Town Hall. I think Nate's been working on some arrangements for transportation for those of you that want to show up. But I think just merely being in the room, having some people speak and talk about your concerns and your needs for housing and the importance of this project to the graduate and professional student community, and just letting them know that you've taken time out of your schedule to come down to the meeting and lend support to the project, I think will be very, very helpful as we move through the process and seek approval of this development. Just so you know, it starts at 7 p.m. It's set to go for 3 hours, so if you show up late, that's okay. We hope things might be wrapped up by around 9 o'clock or so. But I think having a critical group of graduate students on site for a portion of that meeting and some people talking for the project will be really helpful. If you have any questions about the logistics of the project, I'm happy to take them now and answer those.
I had a quick question about, assuming things go well with the town of Ithaca, what's the timeline after that?
So we're seeking to begin demolition in December of this year. The critical part of this timeline is to have it constructed and ready for occupancy in July of 2018. In order to do that, we really need to begin demolition and construction in December of this year. So we're seeking to have all the approvals that are necessary by that point to get this started at that point.
So, what's the final number of beds that we're looking at?
So we were going for 887 beds. That was the original application. There's an area along the Mitchell where we have a large apartment building kind of up there in the right-hand corner that you see. There were some neighbors and others that had some real concerns about that. So we've made a modification, and you'll see on the current site plan that we'll be presenting tomorrow evening, to have townrooms along there and use some of that density to the interior of the site. So we've lost 15 beds, and we'll be at 872 at this point.
No, that's good. That's good. Sorry, just to give me a clue, what roads are what? Sorry, I'm just confused.
Mitchell is here on the right side of it, so it's a little washed out. Maple is over here on the left. And you know, currently Veterans Way does not follow the path through the Mitchell Jovino roads on the interior.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If there's any other questions that you need to see if you have,
you can email me at jt675 or leave your public report.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jay. So we are working on plans. So Gina is in the process of booking a small bus/shuttle. So it will be tomorrow, I think, around 6:30-ish from that parking lot behind the Big Red Barn. And it will be taking people downtown and bringing people back. So we'll send out more information about that over the listserv as soon as all that collects in. But you can expect to get some transportation from campus if you'd like it. Okay, now we're moving into our next section. Oh, yeah, we need your flashlight. Annabelle's Groceries is next up on the agenda.
So, hello everyone. My name is Adam Chalpak. I am joined by Susie Gorman and Alex Donovan. Lily and I are the chief co-directors of Annabelle's Grocery, and Alex is our project coordinator who deals with our partner organization, our parent organization that we are a product of. We want to give you all an update on where we stand, what's moving forward, address some concerns that were raised by the graduates the GPSA, and then ultimately hopefully formalize the relationship that we have with the undergraduate student assembly with you all, the increased communication from our end to you all, and also kind of formalize
was originally in our timeline to possibly have access to the space toward the end of the semester with a full launch moving towards the beginning of next semester. That timeline is still mostly the goal, but has been pushed back some, where we will not have full access to the space until likely February or earlier next semester, and moving from there was related to renovation timeline issues that were kind of outside of our control. It was a some issues with essentially the process of refresher proposals post going to market with contract bidding for renovation ended up being significantly higher than anticipated by the project manager due to cyclical labor concerns that tend to happen in the summers where demand for labor and employment for construction far exceeds the supply. Because of that, the cyclical concerns, certain cost reductions in the renovation plan, fundraising from on our end because of institutional partnerships, we're able to reduce that gap to essentially a place where we feel comfortable moving forward, essentially to zero. And from there, we are now in the full process of going to market with these bids again, and then we will move forward with the renovation as soon as possible. Alex can touch on that a little bit in the future. But another thing we want to talk about essentially is, again, our relationship between our organizations, and I will pass it off to Lindsay and Alex, and they will go through some more of this. But hopefully what we want to do is then open up to questions to get your concerns and have us tailor what we say to your all needs and concerns.
So sort of touching more on our two organizations' relationships, as I'm sure you all know, the TPSA has allocated $20,000 a year for the next 4 years to Anvil and Grove Street as buy-in access for the graduate and professional student population to the store, as well as to subsidies for food insecure students who qualify. That money for this year, the $20,000, is being used to get the project going, so for that construction shortfall Adam touched on. And that does not take away from, obviously, student access or subsidy approval. And then going forward in the next coming years, we hope to allocate that nearly $20,000 with the liaison we hope to develop with the GCSA, which is what our structure looks like with the SA. And Alex can touch on that too.
And so as it stands, our relationship with the undergrad SA is that they have basically two student liaisons who we're about to decide which meetings of ours they would like to attend and to what capacity they'd like to be involved to be informed in our decision making capacity. So we're looking to open up that conversation with GCSA in terms of what kind of relationship you guys have.
And then we asked Nathaniel over here to source some questions from the crowd before our meeting. So we were able to get some of them, and I'd like to touch on some of them. So one of the questions is a very high level an overview of the business model, sourcing, the subsidy, and pricing. There's a few of those kind of end of our model, so I want to just quickly touch on that. So essentially what the idea is through our through CTA, we are a project of CTA, the Center for Transformative Action, which is a Cornell affiliated organization. We have the benefit of 501c3 status, which means we don't pay tax on our the equivalent of profit in a for-profit entity. Moving forward with other race history of reporting to the university, mostly in the context of rent and utilities, there's a working relationship with the university to have those be provided. Then utilizing volunteer labor and federal work study labor, we're able to eliminate labor costs, rent utilities costs, and avoid the taxes that a traditional grocery store, like Wegmans or another entity like that would face, which allows us to price food closer to cost and ultimately allow lower prices. We're going to geographically be in Annabelle Taylor Hall and Annabelle Grocery, which would be right in a nice mix of geography between Central Campus, North Campus, College Town, West Campus, with pretty high foot traffic through that general area. To increase the structural and geographic access to food at a lower price point. The subsidy fund is essentially an endowment fund that is
their liaison partner from the FA who will attend, whether we are advising our meetings or our leadership team meetings, which are students. So it's more for them to be informed as stakeholders. And so we imagine that could be a possibility. It's not necessarily for us to be talking to you guys about, it's more just for our stakeholders. So it's mostly about transparency and then involve the steps that we want to be involved.
I'm just curious if staffing positions would be open to international students, given work authorization issues.
As of right now, I think the volunteer position would be, because of the volunteer. I don't know if the paid position would be. Probably not very open in the spring, but definitely something we can work towards, I agree.
So we're reviewing that in possible schedule where the information is good, either the Senate Relations from the Act themselves or Public Service Senate. So I'm not sure what their regulations are with work authorization status, but we will be using those infrastructures for waiver action.
So if I'm understanding correctly, you said that students would swipe their ID card at the point of sale, and then if they're eligible for the discount, it would be applied like at the cash register. Will the discounts be posted throughout the store, and will students know before they walk in the store if they're eligible for the discount?
Yeah, the way that's going to happen, so just to describe a point of sale transaction, every student would swipe their card to eliminate any stigma with a student swiping their card being associated with a discount. It's essentially to ensure you're a Cornell student, graduate or undergraduate, so that would trigger them the discount. So it would require a registration process, and to be eligible for the discount, you'd have to fill out a survey prior to entering the store, which would give you some feedback on whether you would qualify for the discount.
So you know before, like, you walk up to the counter with all of your groceries that you're going to get the discount?
Yes, and that would say, I'm just going to give an example. We have to work on kind of engineering the ultimate margins on a trip and what the discount ends up being, and whether that will be graded or just that process, yes or no. But essentially, it would not be posted throughout the store, as in, like, this jar of peanut butter is $1.50 if you at full price or $1.35 at subsidy price, just the list price will be there. And then you would know you may receive a 10% discount if you qualify. You would know that information and your bundle, it would then be applied to your bundle of goods at checkout. And it would only be known to the cash register, who would tend to be a store employee that is paid for confidentiality. But we're still working on exactly how that layer mix will happen.
Two quick questions. One very quick. So you are currently planning to close it over breaks, correct?
I don't think, just realistically, if we're opening in March this summer, we would be open. But the goal is to remain open over breaks, and ideally working with grad students. So also Adam brought up the kit sales, which are events we've been having during the fall and February break as well as Thanksgiving, to give a bundle of free goods to students who come to get them through the break. We would probably be continuing that if the store is closed during the shorter breaks, and just seeing where demand falls is kind of hard to predict right now. But the goal would be to remain open for as many breaks as possible in the future.
And my other question was one of which is the professional students would that subsidy be available to professional students as well, or is it something you only look at for undergraduate and graduate?
It would be available for
question?
Yeah. So there was discussion in earlier meetings about whether the money that we were allocating to the grocery store would be more effective just as providing food, like food drives and that sort of thing. Can you summarize why you feel your method would be more effective use of the money?
I guess we can all kind of give our two cents, but essentially that, you know, it's like a big cost argument, right? Where if you're gonna have this initial investment, the business model of a revenue producing store is then sustainable in perpetuity, right? So essentially, if you make this investment, this is going to be a longer term solution to just a $20,000 in kind transfer of food, right? Which is, again, we are not necessarily the solution to food security across college campuses. We're not going to be presumptuous enough to say that. And we think that all of these efforts around CGC nationally and locally that are working towards this are all great. But we think that this model is going to provide one outlet for a lower cost accessible food on campus that is sustainable economically. And we think that is the biggest differentiator between that and, like, that would be more of a food pantry type model. Which, again, there's a small food pantry on campus that we work with and support, and definitely those efforts are valid, but this will be a longer-term, more sustainable solution, in our mind.
A big piece of this is also empowerment, and we think of that through the lens of, first, that we're providing a spectrum of options to people make their own decisions in purchasing their own groceries, and the second, our food literacy component, so what can you do once you have ingredients, and just and building a community around food and knowing how to provide food.
Yeah, so for just one more and then this will be it.
Okay. So how long will the subsidy fund last? And is there any thought of, will it at some point have to go to the activity fee, or are you confident that through charitable donations you can keep it independent of that?
As to how long it lasts, it depends somewhat on how many people apply and qualify for it. We are very confident, though, that we will never let it get depleted. We do have interest from a lot of scientists and alums who are interested in this project, and we aim to channel that interest to the subsidy fund and, like, keep it going in that regard.
And the idea behind the subsidy fund, and I think this is outlined in the business plan that we were sharing with you last night, it's a little bit outdated at this point, is essentially that the subsidy fund is financially engineered to a break-even point where the number of projected people who qualify for the subsidy would then be applied across the entire batch of goods and the entire shopper of non-subsidized students with a small margin increase on prices, which then would equal the resource going to the subsidy fund as the subsidy fund applied to that meeting. So ideally, this is a perfectly financially sustainable fund. But again, we have not utilized any of our alumni relationships or donation relationships at a large scale yet, and a lot of that would be targeted towards the subsidy fund in the future if need be.
All right, with that, I'm going to need to wrap it up and move on. Thank you guys.
So if you have questions, you can each share NetIDs. They're also on the Angles Grocery website. Please feel free to reach out at any time. We will definitely be working to sort of formalize that liaison relationship. I'll speak more to that, but my NetID is DG464. Alex Stone is going to pay MD267.
And AWS223. Both they have our NetIDs and have we've been in contact with them in the past, so if you didn't catch ours, you can reach out to them and you can reach their contact. We're a pretty, like, open and transparent organization, so feel free to email and hopefully formalize our relationship moving forward.
Excellent. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right, like I said, if you didn't get the contact info, send something to Nate or I, and
this year there's only been 6 people who applied for any committee position so far in total, and that's a huge problem. If we think that's with when we try to talk to people in the faculty senate, we're having conversations right now. When we try to have conversations about any issue, it's like it always comes back to where's your guys' buy-in? Like we made a seat for you, here's your spot at the table, and no one's coming. And so we can pass resolutions and we can talk about stuff, but if we can't fill the seat, we lose all credibility we have to stand on as far as our buy-in and share coming. So the
Yeah.
Jeremy's really good. The guy who ended up this year, he's really on his game. As far as like, if you want to be in a committee that's run really, really well.
So if I'm filling out one seat, the other one can be like any matriculated grad student. So if you know of anybody who's interested, send them my way.
Do you want volunteers for the other ones you just listed?
Which one? The campus?
On the previous page.
Oh, yeah. Something wrong with under that?
I mean, I would do faculty senate liaison.
Oh, wait,
one
second. What are you?
I was going to say I was one.
Okay, wait. Which one did you?
Faculty senate.
That's a good one. I did that last year. It is though.
Definitely want to do student assembly.
Can't.
Sorry.
I was gonna do faculty, but that's fine.
Yeah. There's also employee assembly or faculty essay if anyone's interested.
When does the student assembly meet?
Thursdays. They meet at 4:30, I think. And they go 4:30, 4:35. Is someone who's still been on one of those, but we lost contact for a while. So we're going to check that out.
Yeah, I'm at least on like the campus planning committee.
Have you been getting emails? We want to make sure you're not
yeah,
flipping
off
the
like,
thing.
I don't know. I mean, I get emails from them. They still know that I'm on there. So.
Okay. Have you been to a meeting recently?
I've been to several.
Then.
Two-year thing?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so also, if you're on a committee, make sure that you're sending updates periodically to the Vice President for Operations. That's how that's the reason why we staff these committees, is so that we hear back from you, so don't disappear into the woodwork.
This is like all your emails from last
year. I used to send out emails.
We also have all of these committee class open.
The health plan and health fee merged.
Oh, merged?
Yeah.
So there's now just one student health fee. They merged, so that's one committee spot. We still haven't filled it, though. Either of us. So we haven't filled the spot. And then all of the graduate school academic integrity hearing boards, except for after social, need to be filled. So there's two spots for each of these.
The 2-year alternating term.
Yeah. But do you want.
I'll do biology.
Okay.
And some years you'll never have to meet.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was appointed last year for physical sciences, but no one.
Do you want to be on it again?
I tried to appoint you, I think, but I didn't get much response back.
Yeah, they no one ever contacted me.
No. You only meet if we have an academic integrity hearing case in here.
Oh, fuck yeah.
We can.
That's a good thing that nobody has. What's your field?
Anthropology, humanities, and social sciences.
I think it's social science.
Social science. Yeah. So you can go social science. I will actually do the bio one and then I'll keep that one.
Okay, we'll put it down. Now we're actually getting the contention. So this might be cool. Kristen?
I can do the humanities.
You're interested in the humanities? And
I actually just took humanities because I'm happy about it.
So what?
Is anyone else want to come to call?
Is the chair of the Student Advocacy Committee. Amy is in charge of the Programming Board. Faculty and Awards. Who's
Amy.
Talk to Casey.
It's next semester.
Who else?
Madura is on Diversity International Students Committee.
Appropriations. How many people are on appropriations right now?
Three.
How much power do you guys wield?
Especially next fall.
Go to the assembly dashboard and apply to be on the committee there.
Very easy.
Does everyone know how to get to the assembly dashboard?
Tell us.
Wait a second. All of you should have gotten an email from me about committee staffing, and in there is the link to the assembly dashboard. So you should theoretically all know how to get to the assembly dashboard.
It's also at assembly.cornell.edu/dash.
Okay, well, I will get specific instructions to help navigate our there.
Yeah.
We'll get there together, guys.
Well, so, I went there and I tried to do, internal stuff, and I can't, I thought I submitted something twice now, and it's hard for me to tell whether anything needs to be submitted.
So, things have been submitted, but we haven't approved the internal committee positions yet, so you haven't gotten anything back yet.
Okay.
So, it's probably how much team by now, but it just wasn't approved yet.
But send up a follow-up email just in case and move it. Thank you guys, I appreciate that. And Anisha will follow up with the new appointees and the class that we still have left to fill. We'll talk to you soon. This moves us into a breakout session. If you're not getting the agenda emails, let Nate know. Anisha, do you want to follow up with the breakout by your project?
So can we have biological sciences down here? Can we have
$500, and there is really no prescription for what you do with the $500. And then based on the
what's our starting tier?
So the new starting tier of this will be based off of historically how much you've been allocated. So I think probably most will end up starting in tier two. Wait, is that right? Or maybe it's $1,000. Maybe.
Either way, I trust you to mostly act within our interest for this.
I think this would be good because what it means is you don't have to break things up by line item. And, the big thing, so here's the big question, is field funding. There's a proposal to make $200 plus $1 time cover, although there is definitely some contention not to do that, to keep it at two. Do you have a preference?
Well, we benefit from field funding.
Right, we're a field organization. I think I still kind of like the $2 amount. I think there's enough money that goes underground that there's no reason to bring it down.
I think that, I think always we want to advocate for the most money. Honestly, my biggest thing I would advocate for, the biggest, depending on what tier we're going to fall into, I think that we should set up something where we can be reevaluated quickly. We should get to this tier as quick as possible.
So,
we could spend that money. We could spend it today.
We could. So there are four tiers, and the fourth one requires a constant re-up every year.
Okay.
So the thing would be, I have to check on the thing. And so maybe the first year, after the first year, if people are in this one, we don't have the two-year waiting limit. But, like, we end up getting allocated into some building in the first year, right? But for the very next year, everyone, regardless of what tier you're initially signed in, that two-year waiting limit is removed and that you're allowed to apply.
Yeah, but I'm saying we should advocate for, like, a six-month reevaluation. I think in the first 6 months, we should advocate for a quick reevaluation because there could be some groups that haven't been applying for their max funding because they have been limited historically. That's all I'm saying. I think just to start. That's what I would advocate for.
Okay.
Because I don't know if we're going to fall. I think we'll be going to fall one here and here.
Right. Honestly,
hopefully,
Sigma wants to be in three. I don't think we want to be in three.
No, we want to be here. So I just want, if we fall here, I want to be reevaluated so we get here.
3,500. And then these become like our tests.
Yeah. Yeah. If we get stuck here, we want to be able to move here as quickly
okay,
as possible.
Okay. So basing. Kind of had that soft cap of $1,400 or $1,100 that most people will fall into two.
Yeah.
So why not? So what's the criteria to move people to different groups and how quickly can they be reevaluated?
Yeah.
If they think you're
to
well?
Start, just to start.
Just to start.
Because we've been limited.
Okay.
So yeah.
Could be. postdocs have been, that their experience has been much closer. I mean,
just wondering.
Much closer to class. Like they're teaching graduate courses. They're not as vibrant as students. At least in our department, we're much closer.
Right.
Number of concerns about that. I understand that the situation is different.
Yeah, I
understand.
I talked to Tasia about this earlier, and I think it's fine, but I just wanted to raise it as a slight, something I thought was curious. So on lines, let's see, it's the first part of section 3. Per GPSA policy, the GPSAFC cannot fund, okay, there's a bunch of things. And the first item is partisan political organizations and activities. And I understand the reasoning here is basically Cornell is a non-profit 501c3 organization, so we can't go around funding Democrats and Republicans and whatever. This is on page 3.
Line 60.
So I guess my two concerns about this aren't so much as it directly relates to GPSAFC, but as it relates to GPSA. So one, this says per GPSA policy, but this isn't technically explicitly GPSA policy, it's Cornell-wide policy, just because of tax status. And the other part is that we do give money to the NAGPS. The GPSA gives money to the NAGPS. I believe the NAGPS has like specific lobbying activities.
Well, so does Cornell, though.
They're not in favor of a candidate or party.
But it says here, part of this is to the purpose of supporting or opposing any particular legislation.
Mm-hmm. Well, it just has to be that they would not come back now, Cornell or the GPSA wants to.
I guess the money we give to NAGPS is outside of the FC guidelines too.
Okay, but is this a problem?
I don't
probably
know.
Should think about it a little bit more. I mean, I was telling Ian earlier that it might be something we might revisit and talk through to Gina and find out what else we have to figure out on that issue.
That's
for a later point.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily part of the.
So, legally speaking, we're in the clear because it's basically just the FT paying one equal fund and not necessarily what you can think, but you're asking a slightly different question on.
Yeah. For future consideration.
Whether it's open, should or should that even consider this?
Okay, so I have a problem, and this has come up recently, and we'll get to this later in open forum. But Brittany is here from Cornell Tech, and the problem is I would like to see our new funding guidelines language be a little more open to the possibility of funding groups at other campuses. Like, is there a reason why we can't fund, if we have PhD students who organize a group at Cornell Tech campus, and they're paying the activity fee and they're funding the GPSAFC, why we wouldn't be able to give them funds to then form a group?
Yeah, we considered that, and actually as a part of most of the, if you look at the language, there are some places where there used to be very strict language on where the money would be spent for. Like, it had to be on campus.
So I'm looking specifically at line 41. It says all events must occur on the Cornell campuses, and then in parentheses, in Ithaca or Geneva,
right,
end of parentheses, to ensure that the majority of the Cornell community has the opportunity to participate.
Right.
And so,
Yeah,
but with it's special circumstances. But I don't have the time to give them a signature every time they want to have an event. Something else. So if we could just include, the possibility of the Cornell
Cornell
Tech.
The problem with that is that for one group, you're going to open up late. Tomorrow there might be late with international chemistry. We decide that we want to have an event in New York City because that's where the jobs are.
But if it's
difficult. No, the problem is that if providing transport for those events, like, I mean, if you just have an event there and say you have to make it on your own, it won't work for all students who are here. And you have been specifically slightly not sure on how we can fund those activities when not all students can get access to it.
Right.
It's coming from all
but the those students, the students at the Cornell Tech campus can't get access to our activities.
So the Cornell Tech, that's why I'm not completely sure, and that's something to talk about in a moment. Cornell Tech keeps the master, the money goes back to them.
Mm-hmm. For the master's students.
Yeah, but the PhD, I don't understand why it's in fact for us. There should not be a reason for that. Because I mean, they can't anyways use Cornell, they can't use any of the other guidelines on their organization.
Right.
And so they should not be part of the FC.
I think
the money should be going back to them.
I think there is an argument to make for their money not to go back to them because of the fact that the graduate school, you know, sees them as being kind of transient in between times. But if there's an organization, if there's a special interest organization or, you know, a field organization to represent the students on that campus, you know, there's a critical mass. It is a Cornell campus, not some like office or outpost. Then I think that while we're changing the funding guidelines, is that we should have a mechanism in there to at least be inclusive of that possibility and recognize that.
No, I mean, I,
So then are you saying that this is, instead of changing this, you're saying that maybe all students at, all PhD students at Cornell Tech Campus should get their full activity feedback?
I think so, because that's the only right way to do it. Because they can't use the activity, what final funded organizations are over here, and then giving them more money to the FC would actually put a burden on the FC. It wouldn't be, but still that there is more money that's going to the FC.
Hi, I'm Brittany Hoopie, my PhD student at Cornell Tech. Is it possible before we get the students to be activity sent back to Cornell Tech to have some temporary solution where we get the money from the funding committee, even if it's not the full thing going back?
So the problem is that that's an issue that comes with our with the activity itself. It's not something that the FC can address. And that is,
I mean, she's about to say form their club, for example, right now on Cornell Tech this year, can they apply for extra funding? Because right now they're getting zero.
Which we've done.
So
if it's one group of students, it's easier for them to have an exception put in, and the FC can run that. But by the time of the next funding cycle, theory, right, so that going up the next fall, then we can collect it. So for a couple of years, you have a competition where they will be applying for exemption,
so
but then after that, you will find some way of collecting
it. Let's not get too far down this rabbit hole, because we can circle back, because this is a different issue. But I'm saying my point is that we have to decide, because part of these guidelines is either we'll have to decide whether or not we restrict the GPS, the FC funding only to Ithaca and Geneva, or we allow them to grow and do special interest groups and stuff with the New York Tech campus, the PhD students who transition back and forth, or not, and whether to return their funding. And if we're not 100% sure that we're going to return all of those students' funding, I think we should just be careful with the language here and leave that possibility open, that we could interpret it, that we could fund those groups if we felt like
I think it's still there.
Well,
that's
the thing.
They have to apply for an exemption.
Yeah, but that would be for every single event they have to apply for.
No,
that's what I mean.
If they're submitting their budget, that's when they apply for the exemption and they get it. Right? It's the one time that they're applying for budget. Because the problem with that is that we have 300 other organizations, and we have basically for a couple of organizations, we're going to open up 300 other organizations that can have activities where students won't have access to it. That is a problem. I mean, I understand that there's an issue with them, and we have to try to solve that, and that's why we have to. We can, the GPSA, we can, in principle, they apply the funding, we can just say,
tier one field organization, for example, qualifies for 700 plus one per.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's okay.
Any more questions?
Yeah.
The group?
Line 52 through 54 adds the encouragement to track attendance. I'm curious what you think an encouragement is going to do, and in contrast, why not a requirement with, say, a waiver for exemptions in the case of events that might require confidentiality or demand it?
All right, there's been a motion to table until next meeting. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent to tabling until next week?
Do you don't want to pass though? Okay,
can I actually get the dissent?
Yeah, okay.
Next meeting?
Any dissent to extending the length of the meeting?
So, well, technically the motion to table is still on the floor. It's just that you didn't get unanimous consent.
I didn't get unanimous consent, so
it's
so. So we have to, okay. Hold that. Is there a vote to table? We need a vote to table the meeting. Thank you, Richard. Or to table the discussion, not the meeting, on the GPSASD guidelines until next meeting. Voting members only, raise your placards if you'd like to table this discussion for the next meeting. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. And 13. So 13 against, and what's that, 5 abstentions? Yeah, I'm not counting abstentions because people who aren't here are probably 16. Okay, so that failed. So now we have a motion by 10 minutes.
Seconded.
Is there any dissent on extending the meeting by 10 minutes? Seeing none. Okay, meeting's extended by 10 minutes.
I would move to call the vote on Resolution 3.
Seconded.
Okay, there's been a motion to call the vote. All those in favor of calling the vote?
I have an amendment I'd like to make as well.
Okay.
In general, so
yep.
I think
okay.
I will draw that motion.
Okay.
I don't have.
So the amendment's been made, it's been seconded, so now it's on for discussion. Jesse moves to close discussion, seconded. Anyone opposed to close discussion on the amendment? Is there any dissent? Okay, seeing none, we're going to call the question now on this amendment. Okay, all those in favor, raise your placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. That's 15. And all those opposed? 0, 15, 0, 3.
Okay, now can we call the question on resolution?
Yes, is there a second on
someone can second.
Okay, well I didn't call for dissent yet, but yeah, okay, dissent.
$199.
Thanks,
in my application I'm an applicant.
Sorry, yes.
I don't.
No. So, okay. So. I mean, so you can only apply for funding. This is the application. That doesn't mean you get application funding.
That's what I was worried about, you accidentally guaranteeing funding to all applicants.
The cap you can get, do you think that actually prevents it?
I haven't read thoroughly. I know that the cap for tier one, is there a minimum for tier one?
No.
Okay.
There are only caps.
Okay. Then I have an amendment which doesn't include that and deals back with the campus thing, but this is grammatical, should be friendly. Line 41, I think. Yeah. Currently reads, all events must occur on the Cornell's campus. I would just take out the apostrophe S.
Yeah.
That's my amendment.
The Cornell
that's going to be friendly. Right?
Yes, definitely friendly.
Okay. Any?
Richard's next on the speaker's list.
Well, I was going to once again try to motion to either call the question or table.
Okay, motion to call the question. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent to calling the question on the new FC guidelines in their entirety? I still kind of have some issues, but I
so, so you can offer dissent.
What are you doing? That's a separate. We'll deal with. I have another concern. There's some people who left and they were talking to me during the breakout session. They were concerned about if they're initially how you place orgs that have been receiving funding all along, then the first year these go into effect, they're sorted based on their past allocations, right? But there's been kind of like an implicit cap around 1,400, right? So how do groups get into tier three automatically? Like on
the
initial
basis.
Okay.
So the 1,400 goes for the annual budget, but then they've been getting special project requests on top of that. So groups that have used the special projects to add on to, they've been getting larger.
Because the concern was from this group was if they feel like they've been placed into tier two initially, and they really need that money right away, how do they have? They don't want to wait 2 years to apply for tier three.
So groups are being placed into the tiers based on their current allocation, which is full allocation. Not just their annual budget. The annual budget and the SPR. So, and that is implicit in this model that this is what we're going to do. You have a 1 year heads up. And this is,
Okay, well, I'm fine with that for now, I guess. There's no other dissent to call in the question? All right, then we're going to vote. All those in favor of the new FC guidelines as they've been amended. Wait, that was right. Okay, as they've been amended without the and the apostrophe. Raise your placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Shit. 1, 2, 3. Strike that from the record. 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Raise your placards again. Raise your placards again. 1, 2, 3, it should be 15. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I may have been missing someone. We're just going to call it 16-0-0. All right, no, are there any opposed? Is anyone opposed? 16-0-2.
Yeah.
We're
6
minutes.
Any dissent? Seeing none? Meeting is extended by 10 minutes. Okay, so the motion passes. The resolution passes. Officer report. Executive committee.
Thank you.
Appropriations.
No report.
Communications.
No update.
Finance. You guys have food too. Okay, senior advocacy.
Alright, couple updates. We've been working to schedule a Diamond for Stuff event. It'll be held sometime in mid-April. We haven't had a date yet. We're starting to do this thing with the advocacy role in the grievance process. Where basically, if a student is in the grievance process and they don't have someone to accompany them to the event, we are offering to accompany them for moral support. We are not advocating any decisions on that. Instead of in lieu of a town hall, we want to start making this sort of online submission form thing if people have complaints or questions or concerns that could pertain to student advocacy committee, so we're working on that. And yeah, that's about it for now.
Okay, diversity and international students.
Oh, yes, me again. So there are, we wanted to give out the dates for two events. One, the Renaissance Ball is on November 5th at the Hilton Garden Inn. It's from 7:30 to 11. The Program Board is also the host. And the Let's Talk Diversity Dinner is November 17th at 148 Stocking Hall, 5 to 7 p.m. Should I repeat those?
Yes.
All right.
No.
Repeat that. Just repeat it. Repeat it. Just say it.
Okay. The Renaissance Ball, November 5th. In the Hilton Garden Inn from 7:30 to 11 p.m. The Let's Talk Diversity Dinner, November 17th, 148 Stocking Hall, 5 to 7 p.m.
Okay.
Oh, and the next meeting for that is this Thursday at from 12 to 1. At 3:40, something called the hall, right? 3:41.
Programming.
Hey everyone. Three important things. One, I'll be sending out an email tonight with a plethora of dates for upcoming fall mixers and parties. If you could please forward that on to your constituents, it only takes a minute. If you don't want to personally forward it on, give me the information and I'll forward it on, but I cannot do my job or put on great events if you guys don't help out. Secondly, I am always looking for more people to join our committee. And I guess four things. Third, also in the email with the dates for this fall term, I'm also including a survey about grad ball. It'll include choices of locations, two choices, and also a bit of date. We're having a bit of a discussion within our committee about where to have the grad ball, and we'd like to see what the majority of people would have it. That way we could cater best to your needs. And fourth, I am looking for more events to co-sponsor for the spring. No more this fall, co-sponsorship this fall, but if you have an event that would cater all graduate and professional students for the spring, shoot me an email and I will see what I can do. Thanks.
Faculty awards. Faculty awards isn't on the list, and probably, do you have an update?
No.
Okay, I just wanted to, you guys are a standing committee, so I should include you. Okay, does the graduate school have an update?
Yeah, if I could, if I'd known the room configuration better, here's a handout, but it's also in a basket of chocolate. chocolate. But the handout's now the basket. So what I'm handing out is a copy of the graduate school grievance policy. I'm happy to answer questions. I know we don't have much time tonight, but I know some people are finding this not to be as transparent as they would like, or they think it's complex. It is a four-step process that allows students to communicate, address conflict, and attempt to resolve a grievance at various stages, beginning with the field, working on up to graduate school, and then to a graduate review board. It's a four-step process. You could go online and look at any of our peers or even public school peers who have a similar process, although we found one that has a six-step process, so I think four-step processes are the norm, however. But if you have any questions about this, I've always said to students, if you're thinking you might need to file a grievance, come and talk with me, unless you tell me that somebody is breaking a federal, state law or university policy, I won't take any action until you give me permission to do that. And sometimes students come to me and say, I want to have a conversation with my advisor and I want to practice it with you. And I say, fine, we'll practice. So we can be a resource other than just you're deciding to use the grievance policy, but we can talk through some options with you. And I appreciate that the advocacy committee is joining forces or offering your services, because students who do decide to go to the graduate grievance review board are allowed to bring a friend or a witness to the proceeding, and that's always a good idea. So if you have questions or you need any information about this, contact me. I think we're announcing tonight through our announcement something new called Ask a Dean, and you can just pop a question to Ask a Dean, or you can write to me directly.
And perfect. We have 5 minutes left for open forum, which is what we're moving into right now. Okay, so announcements for open forum. Yes?
I have a question.
Sure. So, sorry again about getting into the thing with FC about the Cornell Tech. I bring that up because there is kind of a critical mass now of PhD students that are attending Cornell Tech that aren't one-year master's students, they're PhD a group to represent all the PhD students at Cornell Tech. They're called PAC, PhD students at Cornell Tech. And our current funding guidelines do not really allow us to fund them specifically. So there'll be a resolution coming soon about changing some rules explicitly for them until the guidelines take effect. And so that will allow them to operate that way. And then at that time, we can also continue to have a conversation about returning violent money and stuff like that. I just want you to know that that's on the docket. And if you have strong opinions about that, about returning student activity fees and things like that, to stick around. Brittany, raise your hand. She's here. We were lucky enough to have her in Ithaca just by chance today to answer some questions for the talk. For the rest of the week. So stick around.
So sorry, there was also an opinion paper attached to the resolution, which we didn't get to at all. And those are points that I think we have to discuss at some point. So if we have time, we should do it at some point in the next few weeks. But
read the opinion pieces.
We read and we actually have to introduce motion to change the guideline if there is
right.
Critical mass. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, Anna, you're next.
We're already adjourned. We didn't extend it past 7:20.
Oh, look at that. 7:20. So we are adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.